Blog Talk Radio.
The cost left my heart broken, so I had it closed for repair. Wandering in my desert, your oasis appears. You're like a long, cool drink of water. I'm thirsty, that's clear when I taste you. I know you, I know you, I do. So can you feel? I need to know. Do you remember? Does it feel like an old?
I never get tired of that song at all. Welcome everybody to Spiritual Connections Radio. As you know, every month we have what's called the Men's Spiritual Radio Hour, or radio show as we call it. And you know, me and Mike put this show together a couple years ago. With the idea of really creating a foundation or base radio show that was there that could support men. I mean, it's no surprise in the spiritual industry, or I should say the spiritual training environment or anything like that, that mostly what's out there is women and support for women. And for a lot of us men who have fully kind of come into our awakening and started our journeys, it's great to be out there, you know, with all the great teachers and all the great groups and support and everything like that, but not really finding a lot of support for men out there. So, we came up with the idea of Men's Spiritual Radio. This show and other shows are available to be reviewed, replayed, and everything off of our website. If you want to find out more about what we do, you can go to our website at www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. And with that, I'm going to bring in my co-buddy and friend, Mike. Mike, are you there?
Yes, I am, Mark.
Well, you know, Mike, usually I'm in Florida, but this week I'm actually in College Station, Texas, home of A&M. We won't mention the fact that they lost the football game. But that's a big thing around here for A&M, their football. And normally I could tell you that I'm a little bit warmer than you are, but to be honest with you, down here in Texas, it is actually pretty cold today. And it's been cold this whole week. And I know you've been kind of having your cold spell out there also. So, because I always like to do this, because a lot of people aren't familiar with the great music they do if they listen to the Saint Germain radio show during the month. They've heard some of your music, or if they've gone to any of the Lightbridge 101 channeling events up in Pennsylvania/New Jersey, they've had experience to hear your music firsthand. But your music, which is channeled, is available on your website. So why don't you go ahead and give out your website to everybody so they can take a look at some of the stuff you have? Because I always like promoting you. You have amazing gifts, and it's time for everybody to hear about them.
Okay. Yeah, I have all my music CDs, and I have recordings, a lot of the different meditation classes that I play meditation music at, and also do with my close friend Brigida, and then some other places that I also do the music at. And you can see all that on my website at www.mikesnydercc.com. That's MikeSnyderCC.com.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. All right, Mike, go ahead. Let's get going and introduce the great guest we have back on. He was on one of our other shows a couple months ago. Actually, time flies. It's probably been 6 months. But go ahead and introduce our guest for tonight.
Okay. Tonight we have Garnet Schulhauser. Garnet's a retired lawyer who lives near Victoria on Vancouver Island with his wife, Kathy, and his little dog, Abby. Garnet practiced law for over 30 years, and he retired from his law firm in 2008 to begin his new career as an author and wrote his first book, Dancing on a Stamp, which was published in 2012. Since the release of his first book, Garnett's been active with book signing tours, speaking engagements, and been a frequent guest on a lot of talk radio shows. So, Garnett, it's great to have you on tonight. Are you there?
I am, and thank you for having me.
Okay, so always, welcome to our show.
Yeah, it's always great to have you on. I was excited, and you know, with the announcements you made before the show started, we're going to probably want to have you back in a few months to talk about some of the other great stuff you're doing. And so always a pleasure to have you here. Always an amazing story, so thank you.
Well, thank you for inviting me again. Our last show was in January, actually, Mark, and I very much enjoyed that, so I'm looking forward to tonight.
Wow, so it's almost been a year.
Almost a year, yep.
Well, you know, before we get started, because a lot of people are going to want to know where they can find your book, and more importantly, more about you and all the new great stuff we're going to talk about that's coming soon. So why don't you go ahead and give out everybody your website?
Okay, well, I just launched a new website today, but my original website still functions. It's dancingonastamp.com. And the new one I launched today is garnettschulhauser.com. That's a little hard to spell, but if you Google it, you'll find it on Google. In any event, I have buy links for all my for both books on the various online sites there. There's synopsis of both books. You can dial into a book trailer for each of the books that'll give you some information about what's in them. If anybody wants to contact me, there's contact information on the contact page. You can send me an email. I welcome comments and questions, and I'm happy to hear from everyone. Right now, my second book, Dancing Forever with Spirit, is not yet released. It'll be released in the first quarter of 2015, but you can pre-order it on the online sites like Amazon and Barnes & Noble virtually all the other sites, and you can put your order in right now, and the hard copy will be available sometime in the first quarter. Dancing on a Stamp has been available for a couple of years now, and you can buy it on all the online sites, and a lot of the brick-and-mortar stores have it, and if your favorite store does not have it, they can certainly order it. So I certainly hope that some of the readers out there will take the time to order my books.
Wow. Well, you know, as always on this type of show, we want to talk about people and their spiritual journeys. And I remember from interviewing you last year, we want to start with the story of your family and some of the basic foundation very quickly. And then let's move through how you met your guide and the development of your first book.
Sure. Well, okay. I was raised, born and raised in a small farm in Saskatchewan, which is part of the Canadian Plains, just north of North Dakota. And I was raised in a very religious Roman Catholic family. Like, we very religious. We went to church, you know, quite often, not just Sundays, but First Fridays, First Saturdays, and all the holy days of obligation. I served as a mass as an altar boy for many years. We followed all the rules, and that's how I was raised. So I was raised with sort of all the dogmas of the Catholic Church. And when I got into my 20s and I was off in university, I started to question some of them because a lot of their beliefs just didn't make a lot of sense to me. And by the time I sort of reached my 30s and 40s, I had more or less rejected a lot of what they had said and what they had taught me. So then I was casting about for another set of beliefs, another paradigm to latch onto. And I kept on asking myself over and over the eternal questions that everyone asked at one time or another, like, who am I? Why am I here? What is my purpose in life? And of course, the big one, what happens to me after I die? And I knew how the Catholic Church would answer that, but I didn't really believe that that was the real truth. So I was trying to find answers to my big questions. And so I was practicing law at the time. This was in like 2007. I'd been practicing law for over 30 years. I was a corporate lawyer in a large firm in Calgary in Canada. So one day I decided to take a walk in the afternoon. It was a Monday afternoon. And I walked down, took the elevator down, and walked on the pedestrian mall in front of our office tower. And I was walking along enjoying the fresh air and the sunshine when all of a sudden a homeless man jumped out of nowhere and just stood right in front of me and stopped me in my tracks. And he looked like a typical homeless man. He was, you know, he had the stringy and greasy hair and a scraggly beard, and he had dirty, slept-in clothes, and he didn't smell very well. So I just assumed he was your average homeless man. And my usual tactic when I met these people on the street was to just to do a quick sidestep and go around. But there's something very different about this man. And he basically froze me in my tracks because he had these amazing, sparkling, dazzling blue eyes. And these eyes were doing two things. First of all, his gaze was penetrating deep within me, like right down to the depths of my soul. And I felt like he knew everything about me. He knew everything I'd ever said or done. He knew my hopes and aspirations, my anxieties and fears, and even my deepest and darkest secrets. And I had no idea why I felt this way, because we had never met, but I just sensed that he knew me inside and out. And so I was standing there feeling a bit naked and exposed, but I didn't feel violated, because at the same time, his gaze was sending me this wave of pure, unconditional love that was sort of infusing my whole body and filling me with an amazing sense of peace and security, a feeling I've never ever experienced before. And so I was just basking in the glow from this man's eyes, and I was like in a time warp. I didn't know how long I was standing there. Frankly, I didn't care if I stood there forever, because it was such a great feeling. And then he broke my reverie by saying, "Why are you here?" And then he quickly disappeared into a nearby store. So when I collected my wits finally, I went into the store after him to try to find him. And there was only one entrance and exit, and I couldn't see him in the store, and he had not come out. He had just basically disappeared. So I went back onto the street and walked up and down to try to find him, to see, you know, I need to find out who was this guy and why did he stop me. Couldn't find him. So I walked back to my office with my head in a swirl. And that night I resolved that I just absolutely had to go back and find this man. And it was a fascinating encounter, and I needed to find out what it was all about. So the very next afternoon, I walked back onto the same street, and after walking up and down for a while and almost losing hope, I finally spotted this homeless man sitting on a bench by himself. So I walked over to him, and I said, "So who are you, and why did you stop me the other day?" And he said, "I'm just a soul, just like you, and I'm here to help you on your journey and to answer all of your questions." And my lawyer brain kicked in at that point in time, and my skepticism sort of rose to the surface, and I said to him, "Well, how do you think you could help me, because you look like you can't even help yourself? You look like you've been sleeping on the street for weeks, and you smell like a dead fish." Well, he gave me a big grin, and he said, "You know, looks can be deceiving." He said, "You look like you're a successful lawyer with everything under control, but we both know that's just a facade." He said, "You can turn around and go back to your office and see if you can find your answers in all those emails waiting for you on your computer, or you can sit down and talk with me." So I thought, and my intuition kicked in, thankfully, and I thought, what have I got to lose? Half an hour of my time, I'll sit down and talk with this guy and see what he's about. So I did. And our conversation began. And our conversation went on from that day through the next several months, where we had a dialogue where I would ask him questions, all the big questions and many other questions that came to mind. He gave me some really great answers that really rang true in my heart, and I knew that this guy was really telling the truth. And partway into our session, he actually disclosed that he was really one of my spirit guides in disguise. And so he was really an emissary from the spirit world who had come and appeared to me in physical form as a homeless man to get my attention, because he knew that I had questions that I needed answers for. But more importantly, he had chosen me to be one of his messengers, to hear his message and to write about his message, and so that everyone in the world could read about it. So it was really quite a fascinating journey, and just a big turning point in my life.
Wow, I always loved that story, and just that comment that you made. It's like, look, you can't even take care of yourself, and you think you can help me, and that he just couldn't turn around. Well, go back to your corporate job and see if you can find any answers in your corporate email. You know, Just an amazing story. Thank you for sharing that. Before we kind of move forward, Mike, do you have any questions?
Well, I do have a question. So, I mean, I don't know if it's something that you're going to cover in the next portion here. Was he somebody that you continued to see physically, or was at that point you didn't see him in person any longer?
Good question, Mike. I saw him for the first three times in physical form, and then the fourth time we had a conversation, he no longer appeared in physical form. He was just a voice in my head. And when I asked him why he did that, he said that he deliberately chose to appear to me as a homeless man, as a physical person, to sort of ease me into the conversation, because he said that if he had just started talking to me as a voice in my head, I probably would have thought I was losing my marbles. So that's how he eased me into it. And he actually told me that I was the only person who could see him as the homeless man. So if somebody had been walking down the street that day, they would have seen me on the bench apparently by myself, even though I was sitting there with Albert. So he only appeared to me. But then after the first three times, he thought, well, I guess that this guy is capable of handling a voice in his head, and I'll just talk to him by telepathy. And, of course, I recognized his voice immediately. So the fourth time when he wasn't there physically, I said, you know, Albert, where are you? I haven't seen you for a while. And the voice came across saying, yeah, I'm here. I'm always here. Are you ready to talk again? So from there on, we carried on. But I'll get into this later when we talk about the second book. The next time after our initial dialogue was finished, he did make an appearance in a very different fashion.
Wow. Hey, follow-up question on that. And that is, it's always amazing to see the different things that we can learn when we can look backwards in hindsight. You know, at a certain point when you weren't seeing him anymore, but you were hearing him in your mind, you know, you were hearing him inside, you know, you were getting that guidance that way. Did you recognize that as a voice that you've had heard in your mind for quite a long time in your life?
No, actually, I had not heard that voice in my mind before that first encounter with him on the street. So that mm-hmm. was the first time I actually heard him speak directly. And he spoke in a very he spoke to me just like I'm speaking to you right now, and you're speaking to me. So mm-hmm. he's been my guide through my whole incarnation, but that was the first time he made a direct communication in a conversational sort of manner. And of course, like we all have guides, and for most of us, the messages from our guides are very subtle. They're not sort of direct communication. They're like intuitive flashes, whispers in your mind, gut feelings, that kind of thing. And that's how most of us get our messages from our guides. And that's how Albert communicated with me before this encounter. But in order for him to get his message to me in a very clear and coherent manner, without any guesswork, he decided to make this direct communication, so that he could answer my questions, and I could write about him in my book, so everyone could have, be able to read his revelations. So that encounter on the street was the first time he spoke to me directly like that.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think for a lot of people, they expect that once they have that relationship with their guides, that they can get their guides to basically give them complete guidance all the time. And, you know, I think one of the important lessons that seems to come through quite a bit from different sources is that, you know, guides are there to give you guidance. They're not there to tell you how to run your life all the time.
That's exactly right. And in fact, at one point in our conversation, I asked Albert for specific guidance on what I should do in my life and for each decision and so on. He said, that's not why I'm here. I'm not here to give you the complete roadmap for the rest of your life. You have to figure that out yourself, just like everyone else on this planet, having a human incarnation. He said, if I were to give you the complete roadmap, it would kind of defeat a lot of the purpose for you being here, because part of the challenge we all have is to try to figure out what we should do with our lives, what our life plan is, and how we can fulfill our purpose for being on Earth. So he wasn't mm-hmm. about to make it easy for me. So he didn't give me any specific personal guidance. What he did do was answer sort of all the big questions that are sort of generally applicable to everyone on this planet. and he wanted that to be conveyed to people to give them sort of some comfort and some inspiration and help them sort of on their journeys, you know, the rest of the way forward. But no, he wasn't making it easy for me. Unfortunately, I wished he had.
Yeah. You know, following along the lines of guides and stuff like that, you know, what is your guide called?
Albert.
Albert. So, you know, now that you have this relationship with Albert, have you noticed other guides stepping forward to work with you from time to time?
No, not in any direct sense. I mean, I still get the subtle messages from my other guides, but I don't get any sort of any more direct communication. Although I should say that, as I disclose in my third book, which I don't want to reveal right now, Albert did introduce me to one of my other guides. A lady called Elena, which is detailed in my third book, which is called The Dance of Heavenly Bliss. In any event, but
yeah.
You know, back to the first one, first book, no, I haven't had any direct communication with my other guides other than Albert.
Mm-hmm. Mike, did you have a question?
Yeah, so the question I have is, before you had this experience with meeting, you know, Albert in person, during the previous time in your life before you met him, did you have any kind of interest in anything kind of like this before, or anything with healing or talking to spirits or metaphysical, any of that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I had a keen interest in metaphysics and spirituality. You know, and I had read a lot about other, you know, after I had sort of cast aside the Catholic religion, I sort of researched other religions. I read a lot of books on spirituality and metaphysics. I was trying to find something to hang my hat on, something to that I could grasp onto to say, yes, that makes sense. That answers my questions. I found bits and pieces here that seemed to make sense, but nobody had sort of pulled it all together and give me a sort of a new paradigm that I could just say, yes, I'm very comfortable with this. This makes a lot of sense to me, and this I think is the real truth. And that didn't come until I met Albert. So I've certainly been casting about to try to find my answers, but I didn't get them answered satisfactorily until actually I had my conversation with Albert.
Oh, yeah. So that's like a great tribute to the age-old saying that when the student's ready, the teacher will come. You know, like it was just probably just perfect timing for you to take the next step.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And of course, Albert and I had planned all this before I was born, when I was doing my life plan, which of course I don't remember, and we don't remember our life plans. But it was timed perfectly. It was sort of right at the point in my life where I was where I was kind of really searching for something new, and I was kind of tired of practicing law, and I really wanted to I subconsciously wanted to have a new direction. So Albert pops into my life, answers my questions, and gets me going off on a new track, which is to forget about the law and to become an author and to write books about what he tells me. So it was a real absolute turning point at exactly the crucial point in my life when I needed it.
That's really cool. So let's move forward, because I want to talk about your second book a little bit. So talk about, you know, you said you had this different type of experience with Albert for when he showed up.
Yeah, well, after I'd finished sort of the dialogue with that went into the first book, Albert sort of went AWOL for a while. I didn't hear from him. And then all of a sudden, one night I wake up and I'm looking at sort of by the door of my bedroom, and there's this sort of a ghost-like ethereal figure. And as it sort of came closer to me towards the foot of my bed, I could see it was Albert in his homeless man disguise. And so I said to him, not out loud, but telepathically, I said, you know, Albert, is that you? And he said, yes. And I said, well, you know, why are you here and coming to me in this form? And he said, well, he said, it's time for your next sort of beginning of your second lesson with me. And because I believe that a picture is worth 1,000 words, rather than just give you answers or talk to you about the message I want you to convey, I'm going to show you. And I said, well, how are you going to do that? And he said, well, I'm going to take you on some journeys, astral journeys. I'm going to pull your astral body out of your physical body, and you're going to come with me, and I'm going to show you a lot of interesting things, which I want you to write about in your second book. So he sort of reached out, and I grabbed his hand, and I went with him. but it was my astral body. I turned around and looked back, and my physical body was still lying in my bed sleeping. And so Albert, you know, held my hand, and he led me up through, you know, when you're in astral form, you can walk through walls and ceilings and everything else. Like, there's nothing that stops you. So we just floated up through the ceiling, way up into the sky, and he took me to, the first place we went to was the spirit side, which is where we all came from. And I had an amazing...
Before we go any further with that that story, I have a question for you. You had kind of said that after you had wrote the first book that Albert kind of disappeared for a little bit before he showed up in the bedroom to start this second part of, you know, this you know, journey for you to start working on your book. You know, that time space where he was basically, as you say, AWOL, how long was that?
It was probably 4 or 5 months, I think. Yeah, that he didn't respond to me, which was kind of different, because all the way through when I was writing my first book, you know, we'd have the dialogue, and at any time I wanted to ask him for clarification, like when I was writing from my notes and I didn't understand what I'd written or I couldn't quite remember what we'd said, I could just say, you know, I'd sit quietly and go into a quick meditation, and I'd you know, ask Albert for the answer, and he was sort of always there. And then during this sort of period, he didn't respond, and so I was beginning to wonder, well, has he disappeared? You know, will I ever see him again or talk to him again? He never quite explained to me why he wasn't there, but I presume he had other things to do, or it wasn't the right time for me to get into the next segment of my journey. So he, you know, he has his agenda and he sticks to it, and he doesn't always tell me why he has the things on his agenda or the timing for them, but I know he does. And so he just showed up that night when he thought it was time for me to get going on the next segment. So.
Yeah, your book reminds me a lot of. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Mike.
Oh, I was just going to say, I'm actually reading a book called The Afterlife of Billy Fingers by an author named Annie Kagan. And it's kind of neat that I've gotten about halfway through that book. And what happened with her is her brother had gotten into a bad accident and had passed away several years back. And then he started to appear to her with, like, different lights above her bed, and he, you know, started speaking to her. And so she had a similar experience, too, where she was encouraged by him to write a book, you know, and the entire book she wrote was all, you know, messages from him explaining what it's like to be on the other side and floating in space and reviewing your life after you pass away. And so I'm actually very excited I got into that book before the show tonight, because it's interesting, you know, even when I've done my automatic writing and I have spirit come through me, you know, I know exactly what you're saying. There'll be certain nights that I'm real hot. A couple nights in a row, I can bring the messages through me fast. To me, when it comes to me, it's faster than I can think it. It's how I know that it's, like, the true thing, you know what I mean, that it's coming from spirit. But then there'll be times I go for months and I don't get anything at all. So I really agree. It's when you're ready for it. Sometimes we're in the zone, sometimes we're not. Sometimes we have personal issues to work through before we can get even higher level information.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, spirit seems to know when the timing is right for us, and that's when they will, appear to us, talk to us, do the automatic writing. And when they're not there, they have good reasons, and we can't always understand that, but we have to just appreciate that spirit knows what's best, so we just have to accept it as it comes.
Yeah. I think, you know, what I was looking at, you know, when you were talking about that story, is I know for a lot of us in the spiritual journey, you know, we go to these great events and we have these huge spiritual experiences, and then we kind of come out of it and go back into our regular routines. And there's almost like a depression that comes in, or a sadness that comes in from not being connected with all that great light or energy. And, you know, I guess what I was wondering is, you know, what was your feeling, or how were you feeling with not having that connection with your guide for 5 months?
Well, I felt a little down, because I had gotten used to talking to Albert, and it was really a delight to converse with this guy, because he was just like a guy, like he could be like a friend I was sitting down and chatting over a beer with. He was just very earthly sort of conversation. He didn't lecture or pontificate. So it was really quite enjoyable. So I really enjoyed it, and so I didn't miss it when he sort of left my life for a while. And I really longed to have him come back. So I was just absolutely delighted when he showed up in my bedroom that night and took me on a different kind of journey, which was just really quite amazing. And I have to say that every morning after I had my astral journeys with Albert to various places, which are described in my second book, it was always a bit of a downer because I'd wake up and I'd be back in my body, back on Earth, back to do all the things that humans have to do, you know, the routines, you know, get up and brush your teeth and shave and eat and get dressed and all that sort of stuff, which is really quite mundane compared to, you know, the astral adventures I had been on. So there was always a bit of a downer. But Albert was always regularly coming back, you know, night after night. Sometimes there'd be a few nights in between, but he'd always take me on someplace very interesting. They're always interesting, amazing journeys. Some of them ended up being quite distressing in a sense of because of what he showed me. But overall, they were very eye-opening. But I did miss it. I mean, if the spirit side is such an amazing place, and it's almost indescribably beautiful and peaceful and joyful. And this planet here is quite harsh by contrast. And so every time you come back into your physical body, it's like, oh no, you know, I sort of half wish that I could have stayed on the spirit side, but Albert kept on telling me, I've got things to do here, and when my time is ready, I'll die like everyone else, and I'll go back to the spirit side, but the time is not ripe yet. So anyway, it's always, the contrast between the spirit side and planet Earth is very discernible, it really makes you feel like when you're back on Earth, like, why did I come here? Why didn't I stay on the spirit side? But we all know the answer to that because we all came here to learn and experience things and evolve. So anyway, that's just the way it works. But I do have a much more of a sense of I'm very much more comfortable with what's going to happen to me. I know what's going to happen to me when my physical body dies. I'm going back to the spirit side. I don't exactly know what I'm supposed to be doing with the rest of my life other than to write some more books about my experiences with Albert. But beyond that, that's all I know. And so I have to sort of piece my life together like everyone else. But I do have the overriding comfort to know that I'm going to end up back on the spirit side, and that's just a wonderful place.
What is the purpose or goal of the second book?
Well, the second book was, let me back up. The first book was sort of giving me the macro answers, the big universal answers to who we are and why we're here and where we go after we die and that sort of thing. excuse me. The second book was more of a trying to get me and all humankind to focus on what's happening on our planet and to help us realize that some of the things that the human race does has done and is still doing isn't very nice. I mean, the human race it's a very funny kind of species because we abuse the planet that we live on, we abuse the other creatures that we share the planet with, and we abuse each other. And so the focus of the second book was to sort of say, okay, wake up, humans. The goal you have is to try to increase your consciousness, raise your spirituality level, in effect, increase your vibratory rate so that you can make you heard a lot about the shift to the new Earth. Well, it's a shift to an Earth in a higher dimension with a higher vibration rate. And the only way we can do that is to discard our fear, get rid of our fear. Fear and all of its spin-off emotions, which are anger, hate, jealousy, judgments, those all spin off from fear. We have to get rid of those negative emotions and embrace love. And to the extent we can do that, we increase our vibrations, and eventually we can make the shift to Earth in a higher dimension, which is a place that is very much nicer than the planet we live on right now because there aren't any negative emotions, no violence, no conflicts. It's really quite a nice place. And that's the goal of the second book, was to try to spur humans into, first of all, recognizing all the abuse they heap on each other and the planet and the other animals, And then finding a way to get rid of that and to make the shift to into the higher dimension. So that was the main thrust of the second book. And part of it is Albert telling us how we can try to connect with our guides, because our guides are always telling us how to do things that are going to help us discard our negative emotions, and how to connect with our guides and the angels and the other spirits on the other side who are trying to coach us to become better people. And the other part of it of the second book is that he showed me the Akashic records, which you guys know are the sort of have the history of every life that ever has been lived in the universe.
Yeah.
And so part of that he let me have a glimpse of my past life that I would see in my life review after I pass over, just to show me how some of the things how we can hurt animals. Sort of not intentionally, but just by being careless about what we say and what we do. And so that was a really eye-opening experience. He also let me look back at some of my previous lives in the Akashic Records, which were quite interesting, and every one of them sort of had a lesson for me, and as I describe them in my book, there's lessons there for everyone. So it was really quite interesting. And, we spoke a bit about, how the future can be determined, whether it's possible for anyone to actually prognosticate what happens in the future. And as a very final treat, he actually took me for an excursion to one of the focal points of the source, which is the central sun, where I was immersed in just an amazing sense of love and peace and security for a few minutes before we exited, and he took me back into my body. So it's quite an interesting trip that's detailed in my second book, and I hope that when you guys get a chance to read it, you will understand what Albert was trying to say, and I hope you enjoy it.
Yeah, I know there's a whole bunch of us that are just so excited about the book coming out, and now more so about the third one that'll come out. So go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I'm actually excited to read the first one now that I know about it. So So when you have these journeys and communications with him, do you start out in just a regular meditation, or do you start at meditation and then fall asleep, or does it just come to you purely in the dream state?
Well, in my first dialogue, I would go into a sort of a meditation and then just speak at Albert. In the second segment of my journey, it always came when I was sleeping, and I didn't do anything special. It was sort of like when Albert was ready to come, he would come. And it was so I'd be sleeping in my bed, and all of a sudden I'd wake up, and there would be Albert standing at the foot of my bed, and he'd say, "Come on, let's go. We have another trip to go on." So it was always, the timing was always his choice, so I never knew quite when to expect it, but it always came the same way. It was sort of, I was sleeping, and then I'd wake up, and he'd be there. So that's
okay. That's
how he approached me for the second book. Third book is same way. Third book just describes more journeys with Albert, but different places and different things in the second book. So it's kind of a continuation of the second book.
So when you would wake up, that's the point when you would try to journal as much as you could remember then?
Well, yeah, when I woke up the next morning after my journey, I could remember everything that I saw quite vividly. So I'd sit down at the computer and just pound away and try to record as much as I could remember, and I could remember it fairly well, and it didn't disappear. I mean, in fact, I still remember a lot of it fairly vividly, so I was able to bang out a bunch of notes after each journey. And then after I had sort of finished, when Albert sort of said to me at the end of the second book, like, okay, I've given you lots to write about, lots to think about, so I'm going to leave you for a while so you can write your second book, and then so he disappeared for a while. And then I had the task of sitting down and going through all my notes and trying to put them into a book in some coherent fashion that the reader could understand easily and appreciate what Albert was saying. So the writing part, the journey part was very easy. The writing of the book part was not as easy because you can go somewhere and remember what you saw, but trying to put it down into writing is not as easy. So it was a bit of a struggle, but I kept banging away at it, and it eventually got finished.
Yeah, that's very considerate that he would give you breaks that, you know, if you get too much and it's overload, especially when you have to, you know, there's a certain amount of processing you have to do just to write down the notes and then read through it. And, you know, it's also neat how you say that you have a pretty vivid memory of it, because I know a lot of times with dreams, I know for myself anyhow, you know, if I wake up and I don't start journaling and writing it down within the first, like, 2 minutes before my eyes focus on something else, boom, it goes away, like, so fast. But every once in a while, you know, I run into those very, very vivid dreams that will stay with you through the day. And so it sounds amazing that you could have it, like, as a little movie in your head that you could get some time to really type it out instead of have to, like, rush to the notebook as everything fades away. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, and my experience with dreams is the same as yours, because most of my dreams, instead of, I might remember bits, but as soon as I wake up and it's probably gone within a couple of hours. That's one of the reasons why, you know, and I've asked myself this question, you know, when I wake up after a journey with Albert, I think to myself, now, did that really happen or was it a dream? But I know it really happened, because my memories of it are so vivid, and they don't disappear right away. They stay with me for days and days and days. In fact, a lot of the memories, you know, that I took, like, starting last for my second book was, in the summer of 2013 was when we started those. A lot of those are still quite vivid in my mind. So I know in my heart that was a real experience, and it wasn't a dream, because it doesn't disappear like dreams, like you say, that the way dreams disappear for most people.
Yeah, and I've always said, if you wake up more tired than you did when you went to sleep, you know you were astral traveling, and, you know, you weren't really sleeping, you're just doing work somewhere else.
Yeah, well, the fact is that every one of us astral travels every night when we sleep, except that most of us aren't allowed to remember the travels. Because Albert told me that every night, every one of us, our souls, our spirits, leave our bodies when we're sleeping and goes to we journey to other places on Earth or to the spirit side or whatever. And every night, and we have a meeting and a huddle with our guides, like our coaches, to discuss what happened during the day and what may come up. So that happens every night to every one of us, but most of us aren't allowed to remember those travels. So I was allowed to remember my astral travels with Albert, because he wanted me to remember them so I could write about them. And so that's why it was different in my case. But you guys can rest assured, you astral travel every night, even though you don't remember it.
Yeah. So, you know, the first question I have for you is, you know, from all the travels or what you've learned while you were writing your second book, you know, what do you think is the biggest spiritual lesson that you learned during that phase?
Well, the biggest spiritual lesson is to recognize that every other human on this planet is a soul, just like you having a physical journey, and that all souls are connected to the source, and we're all connected to each other. And so when you can look at somebody that, you know, walking down the street, and you think, well, that's some separate person, I don't know anything about him, I don't care to know anything about him, I don't want to get to know him, the fact of the matter is he's a soul that's connected to you even though you're not aware of it. And the other part of that is that we're also that animals have souls, that animals are also connected to the source and connected to us. And so the lesson from that is that before you think about lashing out or hurting some human, whether verbally or physically or whatever, stop first and think, okay, that person has a soul that's just like me, and we all came from the spirit side, and we were great friends, and we loved each other over there. There's no reason that we shouldn't love each other here. And we have to sort of learn to recognize people as being other souls, recognize the fact that animals have souls, and it's not okay to abuse animals because they have their own place on Earth, their own place in the universe, and it's not for the human race to consider animals to be just expendable creatures that are there for the pleasure of humans to be abused or neglected or whatever. And so we have to recognize our place on this planet. We also have to recognize the fact that it's going to be detrimental to, the human race and all of its all the other creatures on this planet if we continue to abuse Mother Earth. and we have been doing that at an increased pace ever since the Industrial Revolution with our pollution. I mean, we pollute the waters, we pollute the air, we pollute the soil, and we all know that. And a lot of us, you know, are trying to stop it and prevent it, but there's not enough of us who are working to stop the pollution and to stop harming Mother Earth. So the main message is, you know, we need to recognize our place on this planet as a race and try to do our best to stop all the abuse we heap on everyone else and to embrace love and compassion and get rid of our negative emotions. And if we can do that, we can get over the hump and get over the danger of having our civilization destroy itself just like many of the other previous human civilizations on Earth. And Albert tells me there's been many of those. I mean, we're all familiar with Atlantis and Lemuria. He says there's been many, many others that have risen, you know, have risen up in the past, got to a great, wonderful, you know, advanced stage in their lives, and then they just, you know, destroyed themselves. You know, in some cases, just by a cosmological accident, as I describe in my second book, and in other cases, because they became very advanced, very intellectually enhanced, but their emotional intelligence didn't advance enough, so they ended up with letting their negative emotions control what was going on, and they destroyed themselves. And our civilization is at a similar point. I mean, we have weapons of mass destruction that can literally destroy all life on this planet, and we all have to sort of dig down deep and try to work to make sure that that doesn't happen, so that enough of us can increase our vibrations and make the shift to the new dimension. So that's really the main message.
Out of for the second question, you know, out of all the different journeys that you've done with your guide, what was the most exciting for you?
Well, the most exciting for me was clearly the journey to the central sun of the source. Most satisfying, I guess, because it was just amazing. It was sort of like being absorbed into this great pool of amazing, unconditional love that would be like a gazillion times better than any love you've ever experienced on Earth. It was just an amazing, amazing feeling, and it made me realize that the source is really pure love, and that's where all love springs from. And that was just a very sort of brief little journey, and then Albert took me back out. But that was it was an amazing, exhilarating feeling. And then there was one also I had on the spirit side, which is in my third book, and I don't want to get into too many details yet. But there, I had the chance to experience what they call over there the dance of heavenly bliss, which is really quite an amazing experience with another soul on the spirit side, and that's in my third book. So I invite everyone to buy my third book when it's out, and you can read about that. So those are the most exciting ones. I mean, a lot of it was everything was very exciting. I mean, going to the spirit side was amazing because it's such a wonderful, beautiful place. On the spirit side, I met with a council of wise ones, and not just a group of wise souls, very advanced souls whose job it is to oversee all the incarnations on the planet Earth. And so when you're on the spirit side and you're planning an incarnation on Earth, you have to develop a life plan to set out sort of all the circumstances you hope to encounter. And the wise ones will actually get involved and try to give you some guidance on what you should put in or not put in. And their goal is to make sure that you carve out something that is suitable for your stage of advancement so that you can learn things without getting too distressed or too overwhelmed. Because if you put in too many harsh lessons and you're a relatively new soul, it just won't end very happily. So they give you some guidance on that. And so that's their function, is to try to help everyone who wants to incarnate on Earth. And what they're doing right now in terms of helping humanity, according to Albert, is that they're sending or asking for a lot of volunteers from some more advanced souls on the spirit side to incarnate on Earth to help humanity get over this hump that we're facing right now so that we can, deal with the discard our negative emotions before they get out of hand and we destroy our planet. So there's a lot of advanced new souls that have been coming into this planet for the last while for that very purpose. And you won't necessarily know who they are, but they sort of lead by example, and there's a lot of them. And the other thing that the council is doing is sending out, they're sending more and more messages from the spirit side to humans, to channels on Earth, like myself. There's all kinds of people that they channel messages to through mediums, through psychics, and the message they're trying to get across is very similar to what Albert's been giving me. It's to try to encourage humans to get in touch with their spirit guides through meditation, to listen to what their guides are saying, and to embrace love and compassion so that we can, just get along better as a human race. So the Council of Wise Ones is an amazing experience. I also got a chance to, he took me to another planet called Xeron, where there was a race of, they looked like creatures, they looked like spiders, very intelligent. And it was their job to monitor planets in the galaxy and determine when they might be ready to support life, and then they would arrange for other extraterrestrials to take life from one planet and feed it on other planets. And so these people actually, when they first noticed that the planet Earth was ready to accept life, they arranged for it to be seeded, initially with sort of lower life forms and animals and plants, and eventually even humans. So there are people out there who are watching what we're doing, the extraterrestrial life forms, and they are very anxious to see us make it through this hump, this obstacle that we're facing. But they are restricted by the sort of the master directive, which is they can't directly interfere. So the mm-hmm. ETs are watching us, have been watching us for ever since humans have been on Earth. They do try to help us, but they aren't allowed to directly interfere. In other words, they can't go in and just destroy all of our nuclear weapons and chemical weapons and biological weapons. They aren't allowed to do that. They have to allow life on the planet to sort of take their own course. And if that course means that we destroy ourselves, so be it. And it's happened before on this planet, and they're really hoping that we don't do the same thing again.
Mm. Go ahead, Mike.
So another question for you. Did in your journeys with your guide, has he ever gotten into talking about the walk-ins?
The walk-ins? Yes. Yeah, actually, that's in my third book, but I'll tell you what he said. You guys already know about that. It came up in a conversation, and I said, do souls ever run out of physical bodies to incarnate into? Because souls are continually being spawned by the central sun, by the source. And I said, so is there ever a lack of bodies for souls to get into? And he said, no. He said, first of all, because the universe is always changing. And new life forms are being developed in the universe all the time. So there's always places for souls to incarnate, to learn and experience things. But he said on the other hand, on Earth, sometimes the usual cycle of a soul going into a newborn baby and staying in that body until that body dies, that's the sort of the normal cycle. Sometimes he says that doesn't happen when a soul has decided it's time to leave. Say maybe. The physical body is 45 years old. The soul says, okay, I've learned everything I want to learn on this incarnation. I'm going to leave. So rather than have the physical body die off, another soul comes in and takes the place of the first soul. And so that's basically a walk-in. The second soul says, fine, I like this situation. I like this human body, and I like to take over this body at 45 years of age, and I don't need to start from scratch as a newborn. And so a second soul will come in and finish off the physical life of that body. And that's a walk-in, and he says it does happen. And sometimes it's unnoticeable, although sometimes family members may notice a change in personality. It often happens, maybe somebody's been in a near-fatal car accident, and after the accident, they're just a bit different, and that's probably because there's been a walk-in soul. Does that answer your question?
Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much what I've learned over the years, too. And it's always great to get confirmation from so many different sources that, you know, that there's so many people on the same page with how a lot of these things work. And I do have a couple people I know personally who have mentioned to me that they really think they've experienced that because they had a big event in their life, you know, or something tragic happened to them where they've had a total shift in consciousness. And they definitely feel that they've had the walk-in experience. So, yeah, thank you very much for bringing that up again.
You know, you had mentioned that that the universe has a law in place that basically says, you know, don't touch, you know, don't go in and mess with this culture or planet. And, you know, I've actually heard that from a couple of different things when we talk about, you know, different ascended masters and different groups of, like, the Council of Light and stuff like that. And, you know, one of the questions, I'll just kind of go into conspiracy theory for a second, is that, you know, they talk about aliens coming down and actually taking humans and experimenting on them. Do you think there's any truth to that based on the law or what you talked about?
Yeah, actually there is. And I asked Albert about that. He says, yes, they do. The aliens who've been visiting Earth, and there's many different species. It's not just one species. They do come, have contact, and sometimes they have done what I refer to as, you know, abductions. Albert says sometimes, yes, they have done that. It's not to harm people. It's to usually place communication devices on them so that they can better monitor what's going on, so there's no real harm done. So that's permissible under the non-interference law. The other thing that they can do is they can provide some knowledge, some information on technology. Albert says, in fact, a lot of the some of the major sort of technological breakthroughs in human history have been inspired by messages, by thoughts from the aliens. And in a lot of cases, the people who got them didn't know where they were coming from. So they have helped us. And in fact, in my third book, I describe a situation where they've actually been physically able to help humans construct one of the major monuments, and I don't want to give it away, but one of the major historical monuments on Earth. So they could help us sort of in ways that, you know, sort of more subtle ways, but they can't. What they're not allowed to do is to sort of, okay, let's go and shoot all the bad people on Earth, or let's destroy all the weapons, or let's, you know, stop the violence and the destruction that goes on. They're not allowed to do that, but they can sort of help us in more subtle ways, and they have been. But, you know, the obvious answer would be, well, just get rid of all of our weapons, and we won't be able to destroy ourselves, but they're not allowed to do that. So they can help us in some ways, but they can't be too overt in what they do in terms of stopping negative behavior or stopping self-destruction or things like that. Anyway, it's kind of a bit of a gray area, but that's how Albert described it to me, and I'm sure that as I have more journeys with Albert, I'll be able to refine that concept a bit more. But mm-hmm. Anyway, there is a situation, as I mentioned in my third book, where they actually directly helped humans build one of the ancient monuments on our planet, and I don't want to disclose that right now.
Yeah. So just last question as we wrap up the show, and that is, you know, when you went into the records, did you find that your past lives were in the hundreds or in the thousands? Or?
Well, I didn't get to see all my past lives. What I saw was Albert showed me portions of some of my past lives that he chose, so I didn't get to see them all. So, mm-hmm. and he just said, look, we don't have time to do all this, and it'll clutter up your mind to make you see all of them. But he did tell me that my lives were sort of in the hundreds, but he didn't get more specific than that. He did say, though, mm-hmm. When I die and I cross back over to the spirit side permanently, I can go back to the Akashic records and I can view each and every one of my lives as many times as I want. So that's still ahead of me. He wouldn't give me that luxury on these trips because he had a more sort of focused approach about what he wanted me to see.
Yeah. Well, thanks again for being on the show. It's always amazing to have you on. Always a great conversation. And we'll always be reaching out to you to do another show later on as the book comes out. And thank you, Mike, for being on the show. Always love to have you on.
Oh, thank you. It was great to be on tonight, and thank you. Really interesting tonight.
Yeah, thank you, Mike and Mark, for inviting me, and I really enjoyed being on your show, and I look forward to being on it again.
Yeah, it's amazing to see how quickly the show goes. All right, it's great having you on, and if anybody goes to the website, I did put up the link for his new website up on spiritualconnectionsradio.com, so you can see the links for the new website and his other links for his other websites right there. And have a great night, everybody, and thank you. You've been listening to Spiritual Connections Radio.